The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Keep your money local. Bring it home to a Wintrust Community Bank, home of Cubs checking with free ATMs nationwide. Find out more at Wintrust.com/Cubs. Member FDIC.
Hey, everybody. Welcome into the Cubs Talk podcast. Tony Andracki here with Vinny Duber and Kelly Kroll, and we are sponsored by Wintrust, as always. Guys, we just finished Theo Epstein, about 70-minute or so, you know, kind of eulogy for the season, if you will. And one of the first things he discussed, you know, was the solemn topic of Addison Russell and his suspension 40 games by Major League Baseball for the domestic violence. Addison accepted his suspension. It is dated back to September 21st, so he has, you know, that saves roughly 10 games or so going into 18, or takes it off, not saves it. But, you know, Theo was also honest about he's not sure what this means for Addison and the Cubs moving forward, and he had just heard about it, the news from MLB, before he came down. So nothing really to report, but your guys' kind of first reaction on this Addison Russell news here.
Yeah, I mean, it sounded like Theo hadn't had the opportunity to talk with Addison when we talked to him in his press conference. So obviously he was talking more big picture, and I think a lot of the stuff that he said was on himself. What can he do? What can his front office do to, in his words, say, prevent this from happening again? And so I think as the Cubs move forward from this, that's how they're going to look at it, not necessarily honing in on one specific player and one specific situation, but rather looking broadly and how they're going to address it as a club.
Yeah, as a president and a general manager of any organization, of any business out there, anyone who runs groups of people, like his point today, domestic violence is a problem for all of us, and it's up to all of us to find a solution. And that's basically where he started. And when asked whether or not Addison Russell would ever play again in a Cubs uniform, he came out and said, "I don't know." And that's pretty much where he left it. And then he said, right now, we're working on how we best fix this for our organization so that we can be better moving forward for families, for our players, for anyone in the organization. And we start there. And then he basically made it sound like they'll also examine moving forward more what happened exactly. But I thought his words of "I don't know" were pretty telling in where Addison Russell stands and his status with the Cubs.
And moving on to you know, Joe Maddon, it was the move that the Cubs didn't make that also got a lot of headlines on Wednesday, or whatever day we're in here, who knows, day one of the offseason basically. But Joe Maddon will be back in 2019. The Cubs and Theo even said here, but the reports before Theo spoke was, it doesn't look like the Cubs are going to negotiate an extension before the end of the 2019 season, which is when Maddon's contract comes up. But that makes sense. I mean, Theo himself, Jed Hoyer, Jason McLeod, they negotiated their contracts right at the very end, like a month or two before they expired a couple years ago. So that's to no surprise. And it shouldn't really be a surprise that Joe Maddon's back as well. I mean, Theo said that obviously you wanted to play and they wanted to play more than one game this year, but that's not Joe's fault. And, you know, just in general, I think something that we were talking about before the podcast is Theo was also pretty honest about an assessment of Maddon. He wasn't unfair by any means, but he did mention that some of the players talked about not really happy with the way the lineup works and how it's constantly changing. So that's something that he wants to get together with Matt and huddle up and, you know, figure out going into the offseason. But, you know, just in general, he's also said that the professional relationship between himself, Theo, and Madden was great. Just your take so far between what Theo said with the Madden situation.
Yeah, the thing that stood out to me, I think, was with this situation, a lot of people perhaps assumed that the Cubs would go kind of that new school route, or want to go sort of that new school route where you have a manager who's far more closely tied to the front office. And I think Theo made a point of saying that that's not necessarily what he wants. He does not want a yes man. Joe Madden's never been accused of being old school, really, but during his tenure, but he's a guy with opinions and a guy who does things his own way. And I think Theo likes that. He said they have disagreements when it comes to baseball, but that's how it should be. He said that there should be discord, there should be debate, and I think that that's a telling situation as you see the kinds of managers that are hired around the game.
It was interesting because we got, I would say, 20 minutes at least into this press conference, 25 minutes before Theo stopped himself in a way and said, this is all with, by the way, us talking about a 95-win season. And then he kind of had to, I think, use that caveat because here's a manager that's getting ridiculed, or at least people want someone's head to roll or somebody to blame for them not being back in the NLDS and then, you know, having what fans would have wanted as a successful season. And he's like, it's hard to put all of that blame on one guy, Joe Madden, for instance, if that's the direction you want to go. Theo mentioned how it starts and ends with him, everything, the failures, the successes. I mean, he's at the beginning and the end of all of that. So he,
Theo, you mean? Yeah.
Theo. Yeah. Yes. Sorry if I didn't say. Yeah, Theo. So I don't want anyone thinking he wasn't owning up for part of this. But I think it's interesting, Tony, what you were saying about some of the guys in their exit interviews. And again, I want to state that Theo was very transparent, very candid, very honest with us, which is so refreshing from a guy who is in his position. That, yeah, players came in and felt like they could be that way on, you know, their way out and say they didn't love that the lineup changed all the time, yet they understood, because of how deep this team is, how much talent they have, that it makes sense why Joe tries to get each guy playing time. But that doesn't mean they don't have some frustrations. So I think that there's a lot of self-evaluating and self-reflection going on in this time frame. There's also a lot of very emotional guys who have yet to step away. And even Theo said himself, maybe before meeting with the media, which was why he didn't do it the night that they fell to the Rockies with us, is before meeting with the media, technically, before making any personnel changes and or discussions with players, you have to try and remove yourself from the situation and let those emotions sink into a point where then you can, what was the word he used, channel them in a direction that becomes productive, which is clearly a reason why Theo has been so great at what he does. And that'll be what we see from him moving forward. But he went through basically every single player on this roster, gave us a sort of evaluation of where he thought they either improved or didn't improve and what has to change going forward. And the one big topic on everybody's mind, because of only 2 runs in 22 innings, and that's how the season goes down, was the offensive struggles. And I think, Tony, you can expand on, and Vinny, where, I mean, he really broke it down for us, and he was very honest about it.
Yeah, I mean, really the takeaway is that he doesn't know, and the Cubs don't know exactly what happened. I mean, he pointed to the fact that they hit more ground balls than anybody in the second half of the season, and it wasn't even close. They were like head and shoulders above. I forget which team it was that hit the second most, but it doesn't matter. And you know, he also pointed out the really interesting stat that in the second half they only had 50 games since the All-Star break where they scored 2 or more runs. And when they scored at least 2 runs in a game, they were 37-13. I mean, that I feel like this takes me back to like when I was a kid and it was like, you know, the Sosa years and even a little bit after. It was like, no, not doing math. Yeah, I've never been good at doing math.
But not like, only that, you haven't done it since you were a kid, apparently.
Yeah, no, not at all. But, you know, I remember that whole narrative that's like anytime the Cubs score 4 runs, their record is this. And this team was so good at run prevention that it was 2 runs. 2 runs was the biggest thing. And, I mean, that's the main difference. And Theo pointed to, like you just already mentioned, Kelly, the 1 run in the playoff games, the game 163, which is still regular season, but obviously had a lot of weight, and then the wildcard game, and then the fact that on Saturday as well, and you know, Vinny, I know you wrote a story off the offense, they lost to that game 2-1 to the Cardinals. They win that, the Cubs win that game. They avoid one, game 163. They avoid the NL wildcard game, and they're in the NLDS. And here we are on Wednesday talking about the NLDS, not about the end of the Cubs season.
Yeah, I mean, Theo said this a couple times, and this was perhaps one of the biggest takeaways for me from his press conference was, we didn't lose the NL Central in game 163. We didn't lose it in the last weekend of the series against the Cardinals. They lost it sometime back in the spring when there was one game where they didn't do this. I mean, that's how close this division was this year, is that it was one game that could have changed the entire outlook of their season.
His recollection, too, right, that he can go back to that Pittsburgh series, that he can go back to. I mean, this is a guy who admitted he did not get much sleep last night because he was so – I didn't mean to interrupt you there. But – like you said, I think what a lot of you listening are probably also wanting to know, okay, so then what about the coaching staff? Because he addressed that right away after Addison Russell and Joe Maddon, is that they have not had enough time to process this and or talk to the coaches yet. He's clearly not going to take that to us, the media, and relay it before having spoken to all of the coaches. But I didn't get the sense, you guys tell me what you think, but I didn't get the sense, for all of you at home that are hashtagging the fire chili right now on your Twitter account, that is not what I see coming for this organization. And he did mention that keeping continuity, how important that can be. And once you have a thought process thrown in and a new, what's the word I'm looking for? Clearly we're all working on little sleep here, but, a new theme, if you will, and Chili Davis, he has new ways of doing things, new theories. It would be tough to uproot him after some of these guys have tried to implement some of that.
Just like he said that, you know, they didn't make it as far as they want to, and that's not on Joe. The offense breaking down cannot be on one guy either. I mean, he said our offense broke, and he gave all those statistics to back that up. Another interesting thing that he said that I think is really going to dictate the way they think this offseason, we need to stop evaluating in terms of talent and start evaluating in terms of production. I mean, he said, and we all knew when this season started, how talented this team looked on paper, and it didn't play out that way, especially over the second half of the season. So you might be looking at a different looking team at the beginning of next season, just because they're going to take a different approach to their thinking.
Absolutely. That was his way of saying, we're going to make some changes. So for all of you listening that have fallen in love with the core of this group and the roster entail, there will be some players that you love that will not be around in Chicago.
So Chris Bryant's getting traded, Kelly Kroll said it first. Everybody, everybody.
Not what I'm saying. I shouldn't have said the core.
No, I know what you mean.
How about there are guys on this roster who do almost feel like the core because they have been so involved over the last year. But some of those guys, that was Theo's way, in my opinion, of saying it's going to be based on production, not talent.
Yeah, and, you know, going back to the chili point, I mean, Theo said that obviously the philosophy was not the issue because in the first half of the season...
That was the word I was looking for. I'm so glad you came up with it.
You would not have won on $10,000 Pyramid.
I was not going to get that, nope.
So chili's philosophy, the word of the day. Theo pointed to the fact that the Cubs had basically the best offense in the National League in almost every category before the All-Star break. Something broke along the lines. They don't know what it is. He definitely did not put the fault on Chili. But that being said, he also didn't give Chili a vote of confidence either, which I thought was interesting. And he didn't, like you said, Kelly, it's not like he said that every other coach would be back. He obviously gave Joe Maddon, you know, said he will be back, that vote of confidence. But in mentioning Brandon Morrow and Yu Darvish and the potential, Theo did mention Jim Hickey. But in talking about all these guys offensively, he notably did not ever mention Chili Davis. So that doesn't mean anything. That's probably just me overanalyzing as I do. But, you know, we also saw it was several weeks after last season before any coaching changes came on this Cubs staff. So, you know, who knows what will happen. But I do agree with you, Kelly. I mean, to try to put all of this on one person or anybody who's hashtagging fire chili obviously didn't pay attention, because these guys are talented. But this was a team-wide failure at some level. And I think even pointing to the fact that Daniel Murphy coming over here, this was a very prolific hitter, and it's not like his numbers were bad by any means, but he was also a part of the struggle. And you had lineups where, you know, it was Jason Hayward and Daniel Murphy and Ben Zobrist were in there, and along with Chris Bryant, Javi, Rizzo, and so on, and yet they still couldn't score more than one run. It wasn't just young guys like Ian Happ or Kyle Schwarber or Albert Almora Jr. or even Addison Russell or Bodie earlier in the year. it was everybody, and it was a system-wide failure. And so they have to figure it out. And Theo's right, it starts with him. But, you know, there really are no answers right now. And so that's going to be this main, you know, kind of level of frustration moving forward. But also to kind of talk about what you were mentioning, Vinny, that he looked at all the way back to, like, April, or looked at whatever. He felt like he totally backed what Javi said after Tuesday night's game, that this team lacked a little bit of a sense of urgency. They never found their mojo because they didn't have that urgency all year.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, Theo said it in this very eloquent, well thought out, prepared way. And last night we heard it from Javi Baez, who said it in a very emotional, and clearly there's always the language barrier, but he just came out with it. And so I think Theo was able to sort of help us understand a little bit more of where Javi Baez was coming from with his comments of we watched other teams, or we were constantly thinking about other teams. And that was the residue of what Theo then explained this afternoon.
Well, I think the bottom line is it's not 2016 anymore, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is a team that was perhaps looking at what they did in 2016, the way they rolled through that season, the way they were the best team in baseball that
year.
How
did he put it? He said something like, our guys, the thought of we're the Cubs, it's going to be okay, is not how we can think anymore.
And it showed up that way here during this season. I mean, I think they were talking about a lack of a killer instinct, a lack of urgency. I mean, the fact that they had their chances to put the division away because it only came down to one game
and they
couldn't do it. He says, yeah, just showing up and knowing you're talented is not enough. And sometimes that mindset is what makes you come up one game short. John Lester also made headlines last night with what he said, and I'm not going to quote him directly, but
you should quote how Theo quoted it.
Right. Yeah. I was getting there. Come on.
We're all on the same page.
and he said maybe that pissed off feeling in the clubhouse will be our rallying cry next year. We will remember that feeling of falling one game short 162 times.
Oh, I thought you were going to talk about what Theo said about Lester. That's
body
what we wanted to hear.
Dragging through body parts.
I see.
Through
I
the
was
dirt.
Going a little more high concept, but right, that's
well,
fine.
Whatever. We want the non-safe for work stuff in this Cubs talk.
Gotcha. I didn't know this was such an R-rated affair.
Yeah.
But I agree. I mean, and he followed that all up by saying, we have to own it. So he wants his guys not only to be disappointed, to be pissed off going into the off season, but to also do some self-reflecting and own this feeling of knowing they could have done more and found that sense of urgency. Or I don't know that you press that upon your teammates, but you ask for it from your teammates, right?
And if anybody can ask for it, it's Javi, especially after a season where he will probably finish at least second in MVP voting. I think Christian Yelich still gets it. Different discussion for a different time. But, you know, in a month or so here, I think Javi finishes second. So that brings a lot of credibility to everything Javi said. And we've seen him kind of become a leader and everything else. But I think he can be a guy next year that really takes that from game one through 162, you know, everything that Theo's wanted, everything that Madden's wanted, Javi can put that out there, you know, it as the leader on the field in a sense too. But, you know, in talking about the roster as well, there are two guys that Theo did addressed. They have options going into the winter, and Pedro Strop and Cole Hamels said he would absolutely love to see Cole Hamels back. He has a $20 million option for 2019. And then Pedro Strop has a team option. I don't know exactly how much that is, somewhere around like $5 to $6 million. You know, but he just said it. Theo spoke so glowingly about Pedro Strop and how he he wants Strop to come work for the organization when he's done pitching, which is kind of funny.
Ticketed for the Grandpa Rossi role.
Every time they show Strop on the video board, will they cheer as much as they do for Grandpa Rossi?
He needs his own theme song first.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
I think no, they won't.
Yeah.
And part of that is because he, unlike David Ross, I think he's still a bit of an unknown to fans. Not that they don't understand how important he is to this team, and I don't know that they understand, as Theo put it, he is a huge part of the heartbeat of this team. For the three of us who are inside that clubhouse every day and we get to talk to the players and we have that opportunity, we know that because there's about every player in there who's going to tell you Pedro Strop is their favorite teammate. And there's a reason. He's the guy that's picking these other guys up.
He's my favorite teammate. I'm not even on the team.
He's the biggest cheerleader. He does put in the work. He's just got this awesome aura about him, and he brings it every game. He's a huge competitor. He wears his emotions on his sleeve, but he's also one of the best at quickly throwing bad performances out the window and getting right back out there and encouraging all the other guys to do that too. So I don't know if the fans, and for those of you that are listening, I hope, you know, if you can pay a little bit more of attention to the interactions that go on with Pedro Strop and the others. And it's not all about the tilted hat sideways. Like, he brings a little bit more than even that flair.
And just to put a bow on that whole discussion, Anthony Rizzo, who's arguably the face of this franchise, right, his best friend was David Ross when David Ross was still here. And Javi Baez last night, Javi Baez might be the new face of this franchise. Last night he said Pedro Strop's one of the best friends he's ever had in his career. So there you go.
And it was Strop, if you remember back to, it was April or May, whenever Javi hit the two homers against the Pirates in back-to-back games, they had multi-homer games back-to-back. And whenever he popped out and he didn't run out the ball, and he was pissed about it, and it was just out of frustration, it was Strop that stepped up to Javi and said something like, we don't do that here, you know, you make sure that you run that ball out, doesn't matter how many homers you hit, doesn't matter how much you're struggling. And so it was Strop, this jovial guy, but still has this kind of behind the scenes leadership role as well. So, you know, definitely expect him back, Theo said absolutely he would love to see Hamels back, and Hamels said the same thing last night. I mean, in a way, I believe that Hamels has almost been advocating for his option to be picked up from the minute that he stepped foot here, you know, with some of the things he said, like, you know, injecting himself in this Cubs-Brewers rivalry and saying it's not a rivalry. And then, you know, as well, he's been very open since the minute he got here that he's always wanted to pitch for the Cubs. He loves where this franchise is going, and he would love to be back next year.
Break down a little bit, because there are a couple ways the Cubs could go about this. I mean, picking up the $20 million option is an obvious one. They also can let him go into free agency. And then how does that play out exactly? The Rangers still have to pay him that $20 million, and then they can basically sign him. They could do something like what they did for Tyler Chatwood, like a two-year deal, $32, $34 million, something like that.
They could. You know, there's a buyout, I think it's about $6 million, that the Rangers are supposed to pick up if the Cubs do not pick up the option. But for a one-year deal, I mean, people have said before, agents around the game and Theos of the world, there's almost no bad one-year contract in baseball with no salary cap. So even with the luxury tax, I mean, $20 million is probably the best thing that they could ask for, because you never know if you want to sign Cole Hamels to a multi-year deal and it just doesn't quite work out, or he suffers some sort of injury. Unfortunately, that's where the Cubs are at with both Chatwood, as you mentioned, and Yu Darvish. So I think I feel like Hamels will be back for sure next year. You're right, Kelly, they could still do something else. But I bet that would probably piss the Rangers off if they're like, oh, yeah, pay the $6 million option or buyout or whatever, go to free agency, and we're going to negotiate for less than $20
million.
Sure. So I imagine maybe they'll just pick up the option. But given that they don't know what's going on with Darvish or even Chatwood this year as well, Chatwood was the one question that Theo refused to answer just because he hadn't yet met with Tyler.
He passed on it.
Right.
I'll pass. It wasn't a refusal so much as like a pass, but yeah, that is sort of a refusal from Theo. But just for some optimism here, since we are on the what is a beautiful day, and it would have been awesome to see the Cubs play on this 80-degree day.
And the wind is blowing out very hard to left. Even the Cubs could have scored more than one run tonight.
But if you think about that, a healthy Yu Darvish, John Lester,
Kyle Hendricks.
So I was going to go John Lester, and then, okay, now I'm all confused. Yeah, so you guys get it. That's a really, really
pitchers.
Quiet a rotation, though. I mean, you can
back to where we were at spring training at the start of the
only
year.
Only you've got Cole Hamels instead of your Tyler Chatwood.
Correct.
And Drew Smyly. Don't forget about him. The Cubs have been – they shut him down with an eye of getting him ready as a starting pitcher for 2019. So they have a lot of starting pitcher depth all of a sudden here.
I mean, yeah, that's something else. Something to be, I think, excited about. But then let's roll through a few again. Theo said all this in an hour and 11 minutes, and we're trying to do it a little bit quicker than that. But as we run through a couple other players, I know you would probably be wondering about at home. Chris Bryant doesn't think he'll need surgery as of the latest medical updates they have. Thinks that just this time off is going to be enough to get him back to, what did he call, a monster. Should have a monster year next year, I think is how he put it, as long as he's healthy. Who are a few other guys? Wilson Contreras, I specifically ask about that because he's a guy that it took Upwards of an hour after the game before he stood in front of the media, because he is such an emotional guy. You could tell he had been crying. This had been such a grind for him this year. Personally, he was battling just not having the power, not seeing the results that he wanted, but was trying to convince himself that the work he was doing behind the plate and improving there and managing this pitching staff that was constantly changing this year was positive for him, which he did take that away. But Theo was very clear in that he's our catcher, he's our guy. He needs to go into this offseason and make some adjustments and stuff. Who am I missing? Who else do they, you Darvish expects him to be healthy, ready to go.
Morrow, but won't definitely put him in at closer.
Yeah, didn't tab him as the closer, but part of a very strong bullpen, which is something he'll be focusing on, as we know, in the offseason, adding arms. They're going to have to figure out the lefty situation. I mean, your take on Justin Wilson.
He's a free agent, probably not coming back, yeah.
Daniel Murphy. It wasn't as convincing as the Cole Hamels, absolutely, but it was, we'd love to have him back. We'll kind of see how that plays out, sort of thing.
The exact quote that I thought was interesting was, we look a lot better with him than without him.
Okay.
And maybe that's just talking about how good Murphy was for them after they got him.
Offensively speaking.
Offensively, yes. But I think for a team that is coming off a woeful second half offensively, and for a team that is looking maybe to not change personnel so much as change mindset, perhaps that's something to keep open. He said he wouldn't rule anything out, Theo did.
Right, but that's also what I was getting at before. I mean, this team did have a woeful second half offensively. Murphy was in the lineup for almost 75% of those second half games. So they still struggled even with him, and obviously his defense at second base leaves a little to be desired. So the one thing I kind of thought was interesting is when Theo talked about Murphy, he said, we'll see what league he's playing in. That's what he said first. I think the way, you know, Murphy coming off some knee injuries, and that's definitely sapped his range in the field. I think a lot of people look at him as possibly a designated hitter in 2019.
Yeah, and I just, to what you were saying, when it came to Daniel Murphy, it jogged my memory about one of the last questions it was asked was a leadoff hitter. I don't know how many of you are still curious about a leadoff hitter, but, you know, Theo mentioned it being, of course, a priority heading into the offseason, but a priority in where it lines up with the other priorities that they have to hit, which is, well, how did he go through it? Hitting more home runs, getting more on base, getting guys on base more. Like, he went through this whole list of priorities. And in other words, I don't think that the whole thought of a leadoff guy is going to be something that they are strongly going after this offseason.
Yeah, and just as a to tie into the offseason, and I thought this was an interesting comment, a lot of people are going to go into the offseason expecting this team with its expectations, and it's been acting like the Yankees in recent years to go out and acquire big name guys for every weakness this team has. Theo said, we spent a lot of money, and that's not always the answer to rush out and spend more. Interesting point.
So no Bryce Harper. Kelly said earlier Chris Bryant's being traded, so a lot of changes coming.
I did not say that. For all those that didn't hear me earlier, that is not at all what I said.
That is not. But that'll do it here. Obviously, this is just a rapid reaction to Theo's initial eulogy of the season. Lots to come here in October, November,
rapid,
December.
That's all right.
26 minutes of rapid is better than the hour and 11 minutes.
Exactly. Condensed version. This is like with takeout commercial. Yeah.
That's not to say that that was not a knock on Theo. Everything he said today was very, very interesting. And I know from the standpoint of covering the team every day, you really appreciate the transparency at the end of the year when someone's willing to sit in front of you and own it and be as engaging as he was. It's not easy to stand and talk like that for over an hour about very difficult topics while you're still emotional. So,
I mean, I didn't fall asleep at all. So it was definitely interesting.
And you're running on what, 3 hours and a half?
Yeah. So, I mean, I actually did have that thought though, Kelly, like you said that it was almost like a lecture. I felt like I was in college and it was just Theo was just holding court and discussing the ways of the running a baseball team.
I'll tell you, I haven't taken this many notes since college. So there you go.
All right, we are going to end on that, and we're going to throw it to a break. Luke Stuckmeyer will take it from there.
plenty of talk about the Cubs' anemic offense during the second half of the season especially. Theo said it's too early to talk about any changes to the coaching staff, but he also didn't sound like a big fan of the job done by hitting coach Chili Davis. Now, they made a change bringing Chili in this year. David, could it be one and done for Chili Davis?
There's an opportunity that when you have these end-of-the-year meetings, you know, Theo asked you to really kind of give how you felt. Mm-hmm. And then they'll go back and they'll say, all right, well, we would think this. A lot of guys underperformed this year. A lot of their stud guys that they relied on to have better years than their previous years. So right now, I like how Theo is going back. He's like, hey, we got to analyze everything right now. They don't know what's going on, because you can't have the reduction in numbers from so many key spots throughout the lineup.
And people forget that they made a change last year, removing John Mailey, because they wanted players to use the whole field, not strike out as much, and strikeouts were still an epidemic.
He pointed out that it worked in the first half of the season, but we watched him for what? An hour and 15 minutes, yeah. Theo? And by the time he was done, I couldn't decide if I wanted him to run the Cubs or be the new mayor of Chicago when it's time. You know, I mean, he's that inspiring sometimes, but he talked about how not only did players not meet expectations, more didn't meet expectations than did. And that's something they're really, really concerned about.
Now, Theo loves to use the phrase that player development isn't always linear, meaning that sometimes there's bumps along the way. But, David, clearly we haven't seen the progress in some of the young hitters. Should we still hold out hope that guys will make that jump? Or at this point, are they pretty much the players they're going to be for the rest of their career?
I really liked when Theo said, now it's time for production over talent. These guys have been in the big leagues. I'm not going to say the guys, but there are spots on this line, on that baseball field that guys haven't really produced yet. So now it's going to be either, hey, put up or shut up. I'm going to say it nicely. You have to go there, produce. If not, you will not be on this team anymore. They will go out, get some guys that can do the job. So I love how really stern he is really putting it out there.
Well, who were the young guys that did meet expectations?
Javi
Baez. Yeah. But after that, the list kind of goes, well, they maybe did what they've done before, or they regressed. Yeah. So really it was Javi Baez. Kyle Hendricks had a rough first half of the season. You know, even in the pitchers, it's really still Javi Baez.
Exactly.
You know, fans think they're saying, well, just throw all kinds of money at Bryce Harper and Manny Machado, and that's going to fix all your offensive woes. But these guys are going to command huge contracts in free agency. David, at some point, the luxury tax kicks in, and the Ricketts family's not going to pay a huge luxury tax amounts. What's realistic to expect in terms of offseason changes to improve the everyday lineup?
You know, it's tough. That's tough. I want Manny Machado.
Yeah, I agree.
That's the guy, one piece that I would give my money to. Just because you can slot him at third base, keep Javi at short, move Chris Bryant to left or right, and then you can have David Bode and Ben Zobrist play second base, move Jason Hayward to center field, and then you have a serviceable team. But there's so much money wrapped up right now in guys that it's really tough.
What if the only way you can get Manny Machado is if he plays shortstop? You tell Javi to go back to second base?
I think I would totally be okay with that.
I don't think he's as good of a shortstop as Javi, but if that's what it takes to get him on the team, I'd put him at shortstop.
And Theo was talking about how much of a team player Javi was. I know Javi, and he would be okay with it because they're brothers. You know, he'll feel comfortable with him, the Latin connection. And just really, you're upgrading your team when you bring in a guy like him into this team.
Yeah, and to me, he's a more versatile offensive player than Bryce Harper, who was another swing-and-miss guy who goes through long periods where he doesn't hit the ball consistently. Another important offseason question, Cole Hamels, a $20 million option for next season. That's a lot of freight for a player who's getting a little bit older. He was great since he came over here, but when you consider the uncertainty surrounding Yu Darvish, you don't know what you're going to get from him. Would you bring back Cole Hamels, pick up that option at $20
million? Definitely. I'm taking him, the leadership he brought, just that charisma that he had. And once you saw pitching big-time games, you saw a different pitcher. In Texas, when the games weren't mattering, he was giving up homers. But when you saw him have to lock in, he was able to put it where he wanted. He's a leader, and all the players on the team know that they hope to have that guy back.
I think we said it a month ago, pay the man. It's 1 year. You know, even if it's short-term, you're not paying some six-year contract. Pay him.
For sure.
You know, fans say trade everybody. Trade Russell, trade Schwarber, Elmora. But that's not realistic either.
No, you want to see the guys get better. You know, they want those homegrown talent. Even though there's not a lot of homegrown talent from the Cubs, you want those pieces that you brought over for that World Series run to really mature and blossom.
I was interested in one other player that didn't get brought up a whole lot was Chatwood, and he didn't want to even talk about it. He said, I haven't talked to him yet. So that's another guy where you look at the rotation, you go, what's he going to be next year? Where are some of these guys going to be? You know Darvish with the money is coming back and you're going to try and pitch. After that, you're not quite sure. So, I mean, I don't think Chatwood's on the team, but we'll find out.
One thing we know for sure, it's going to be a very interesting offseason on the north side. You mentioned Chatwood. Can they find a taker for Jason Hayward? All the money left on that contract. Plenty of questions surrounding the Cubs. Luke, David, thank you so much for joining us.